Okay, the next speaker is Dan Marsh, talking on climate change in the mesosphere from 1850 to 2100.
Okay.
Thank you.
So clearly this is a modeling study. Yeah, I'm going to talk about some simulations conducted over the last year or so at NCAR using a new version of WACM called the Community Earth System Model, WACM, CSM WACM. And the big difference, I guess, here is that we are now have the capability of coupling to a deep ocean model. And this opens up the possibility of running past and future climate scenarios without having to rely on climatological SSTs or just observed SSTs. So sea surface temperatures. So just an overview quickly of the model. It goes up to about 140 kilometers, has 66 levels. We run our simulation at roughly 2 degrees horizontal. It has fully interactive chemistry. And we nudge the QBO in the tropics in the stratosphere. We take a data set from Judith Lean on daily spectral radiance. And you probably already know that it has thermospheric physics, gravity waves that are generated by, triggered by fronts and convection. And one of the improvements over earlier versions that we get a better variability in the model is, in particular, the frequency of sudden stratospheric warmings. So just a quick climatological snapshot here just to show comparisons between winds and temperatures on top WACM. And here we have some climatology based on observations. This is in the UR's Reference Atmosphere Project, and this is SABRE, averaged from 2002 to 2005. And so, you know, reasonable. There are some biases here you can see. But just in general, the model seems to be doing okay. You can argue how well, but. So what am I going to show you today? It's a coupled simulations that we did for the IPCC CMIP-5. They started out in 1850, where we balanced the model for pre-industrial conditions. Being as it has an interactive ocean, you need to have the whole model sort of balanced when you don't think there's a forcing. And so we ran that out for hundreds of years to make sure the model was balanced, and then we run forward in time. So we start out with what we call a pre-industrial time slice control as perpetual 1850. We then ran forward up to present day. And we did split off from that simulation an ensemble of simulations from 1955 to 2005. And those had observed forcing in greenhouse gas and ozone depleting substances, as I mentioned, the solar daily spectral irradiance, volcanic sulfate heating. And here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to contrast, instead of trying to do multiple linear regression and everything, I'm just going to take some 20-year averages over the ensemble. So really beat down statistics and look at different parts. So I'll compare this 1850 conditions to the last 1985 to 2005 average. And then I'll go out into the future and look at 2080 to 2099 at the end. So sort of 20-year blocks over multiple ensembles and compare those. So going out into the future, we follow the IPCC representative concentration projections, RCPs. And we have a number of them here that we ran, the so-called RCP 2.6, 4.5, 8.5. And what those numbers are is the radiated forcing at the end of the 2100 in watts per meter squared. And I think mostly for this talk, I'm just going to really focus on the difference between the 2.6 and the 8.5 scenario. Kind of gives you a spread, an idea of the spread in the predictions. So these are the boundary conditions for different radiative gases or ODSs here. You can see that here's CO2, and then when you get to, this is present day about here, this is sort of just business as usual, keep on producing CO2. And the 2.6 kind of goes up to a maximum. We call this peak and decline, where people suddenly stop driving cars, and it starts to go down. Here's this methane. So, you know, we've already heard a little bit about how it kind of leveled off here, and now the scenario, three different scenarios here. Those are the most important things, I think, probably, and perhaps the CFCs, for driving mesospheric variability. Okay, and then, being as we don't have a model to predict the future sun, we just took the last four solar cycles and repeated that out into the future to still have that sort of variability going into the model. Okay, so just really broad now, just looking at three heights in the model. This is global mean temperature anomalies relative to 1960 to 1990 average, 61 average. So at the surface, you can see that, and I think here's 4.5 and 8.5. So at the surface, you can see that we're predicting a warming of the surface by almost 4 Kelvin under the 8.5 scenario. You see that the CO2 cools the stratosphere, and so in the right near the stratopause, you're going to see that the stratopause is cooling by 15 Kelvin by the end under this 8.5 scenario. And then up, you know, in the thermosphere, here again we're seeing really, really strong trends here, 80 Kelvin cooling going out to the end. And you'll also see, of course, the solar cycle forcing in there. Okay, so I'll just start going through the variability in the constituents, just sort of show you the differences pre-industrial, the present, and into the future. So start out with carbon dioxide. So here's our pre-industrial carbon dioxide here. And here I'm going, this is now from the surface all the way to the top of the model and for 1850. And then this is the difference between that pre-industrial condition and our present day. And this is a 70 contour here, 60 contour. So throughout pretty much the whole mesosphere, stratosphere, we're seeing an increase in of more than 60 ppm throughout the whole atmosphere here from pre-industrial conditions. So I'm comparing this point here to that point here. It's fully mixed gas, so we kind of expect that. That makes sense. Going out into the future under this extreme scenario here, that's now present day at about, well, actually, we're getting closer to 400 now, but that's 350 for present day here, all the way up to the mesopause. And now you're going to add on an additional 450 going out to the end of to the 2100. So now methane, same kind of idea here. So this, now I'm just looking at the surface up to 0.1. So this is sort of looking at the stratosphere. You know, and you can see that it's dropping off with height. That's because it's becoming oxidized, and that's the source of water. Right? So between methane 1850 and present day, we can see almost a doubling of methane, and that's from here to here. So that makes sense. And then if you look at going out again into this particular scenario here, you can see a further doubling. This, I went from ppm to ppb here, but this is 1.6 ppm, and again 1.6 ppm. So you think a doubling, and that's going to get you twice, you know, that multiply those increases by two, and you'll get roughly what's going to happen to water. Well, let's look at, so before I get to water and temperature, here's now, we talked a little bit about this, or other people have talked a little about this. This is the change in geopotential height. So our model works on constant pressure surfaces, and so this is now from 10 millibars or 10 hectopascals all the way up to about 110 or so. So this here is easy, 80 kilometers here. This 0.01 is kind of a useful number to look at if you're wondering roughly where the PMCs would be. And you can see between pre-industrial and present day, the atmosphere, or the mesopause region, dropped by about a kilometer. Okay, so everything sunk by about a kilometer. Going out into the future, if we continue to produce CO2 as we are, then you'll see that we could see another maybe 2 kilometers drop in the atmosphere going out by the end of the century. And so here's now temperature. Okay, so on top panels I've got January, and bottom panels July. So those are called summer mesopause. This is for 1850 here. And what we see here, and then this is the difference in 1850 and present day. And you can see general cooling everywhere here. What you do see is a slight warming here. And I'll talk to about that in a second. So if you're looking on constant pressure surfaces, cooling everywhere pretty much, except for this little anomaly here. But when you start looking at constant altitude grids, you can see that there's a zero line right where the PMCs are in the PMC season. Again, this zero trend line that we seem to get. This point here, as you can see, is in agreement with Ann Smith's result looking at previous WACM simulations, where we see that this is a region of warming. And I'm not going to go into that because the next talk is really going to deal with this particular topic in detail. Okay, but now just because they're a little hard to see, this is just a blow up now of temperature changes on an altitude grid, January and July. Right there, say about 83 kilometers, is right where that null point is. So the trend between pre-industrial and present on an altitude grid, at least, is zero, right there where the PMCs are. Okay, going out now into the future scenario, so comparing present day to the end of the century. Now this here is the temperature at 1995, in present day temperature, and this is the difference. Again, you're going to see cooling here, and I focused on the mesopause. So Stan, we'll talk about what's going up in the lower thermosphere at some point, but essentially cooling everywhere. But again, when you start looking at things on constant altitude, you see that there's that zero trend line here, and in fact, there's warming above that. So, and then just to blow that up again so you can see. And so, you might, below 80 kilometers, you might see a 10K cooling. This is this big cooling you're going to see throughout the stratosphere of 15 or 16 Kelvin by the end of the century. Here, zero line, and then maybe a 4 to 6 Kelvin warming above that, above, say, near the mesopause. Okay. All right. I've been focusing on 8.5, but here's the CO2 scenario going from present day to a more optimistic scenario for CO2, where you can see that the peak and decline scenario. And in that situation, the cooling is much less throughout there. So here we're only seeing coolings of maybe 5 Kelvin as opposed to 18 Kelvin or something like that. All right. Water vapor. So this is the methane. So pre-industrial to present. So this is water vapor of 5 ppm back at 1850. And over the last 150 years, we've seen that increase by about 1.6 ppm. And that goes all the way up to where the PMCs are here. But so you may see 0.8 ppm increase in water vapor from pre-industrial to present. It doesn't really affect, the changes aren't that different when you look at it in an altitude grid. And then going out further, so now this is present day, so we've got a maximum of 7 ppm here and here in the near the stratopause. And then you could see, if we continue to produce methane, that you may actually see an additional 3 ppm going out into the future by the end of the century. But if you follow the more optimistic scenario, then actually methane will be starting to go down. So by decreasing by about half a ppm at the end. Okay, but there's an important caveat here that if there is a trend in PMC, this model does not have PMCs. And this is a figure I showed at AGU a while back, that while you can definitely have a trend here in the water vapor, if there's a trend in PMCs, that's going to modulate the water vapor. And so you might actually see a larger trend just from the fact that the PMCs could be trending. And that's not going to be included in any of the figures I've shown you. Okay, and so I'm going to switch topics now and talk a little bit about tides and trends, because I think this is important for understanding things like SBUV. And start out with a figure from that I showed in Montreal in 2009, showing coupled simulations, with PMC, Wacom PMC simulations, same model that Amy showed, where I looked at the phase of the diurnal tide, or amplitude of the diurnal tide, and overplot PMC ice mass from the model. And what was I thought is important to see here is that there certainly was, depending on latitude, maybe one over a Kelvin amplitude where you have ice mass. So that did actually in the model modulate the amount of ice. So it turned out that the diurnal tide, this is the westward one, so this is the migrating tide, had the largest amplitude at high latitudes. And you know, there are other modes, and maybe they're more important when you get to the pole. But I thought I'd just focus on that and ask, in these simulations, is the tide trending? Because if it is, that may also affect PMCs. So first of all, I started looking at sort of PMC heights here, 70 degrees, where that tide was, where that ice mass is. And I looked at the amplitude of the tide from 1960 to 2005 here. And you can see it's about a half to 0.7 Kelvin average over that period. Phase is very constant, doesn't really change. There's no statistically significant trend on the phase in the tide over this period, so that's some good news. Okay. And then looked at, what was the difference here? Oh, looking at into the future here, and we see maybe an increase here, but still there, you know, it's the error bar, this is 2 sigma error bar on the fit, so you can see it's comparable to the fit, so perhaps not statistically significant, though maybe there is an indication of an increasing trend here. So Northern Hemisphere, it doesn't look like there's much of a trend. What's interesting, though, is that in the Southern Hemisphere, over the last 45 years, there seems to be an increase in the diurnal tide amplitude, statistically significant and quite a bit larger here. And it's going up over this period, 1960 to 2005. If I go look in the future, it starts to go back down again. And again, statistically significant, this is 2 sigma, so really a really strong trend downward following present day. So this Southern Hemisphere is probably the same mechanism we talked about as far as changing trends and the changing. It probably has something to do with the ozone hole development and recovery here, why we're seeing different trends over the last 50 and the next 50 years. In fact, if you kind of look at this, you can see maybe it's even strong. You see that the ozone hole recovers about here. So, you know, this trend here may be stronger than this trend here. Yeah, the scenarios on the CFCs are pretty much identical across all of them. So what's that? The ozone hole recovers. Going out further, you're going to see what we call a super recovery of ozone, because when you get really cold, the stratosphere will actually, you'll get more ozone. But that's really towards the end of the simulation. So over this period, the scenarios don't really change. Okay. So let me finish. And okay, so just I had another quick look at the semi-diurnal, which peaks, has significant amplitude at here at 60 degrees. And so I thought I'd focus on that and just see if there's any trend there as well. So looking at Northern Hemisphere, it's pretty ruler flat. I don't see anything here, any indication of a trend in the semi-diurnal tide. And there is a trend here going out into the future. It is statistically significant, and it appears to be slightly negative. And then looking to the Southern Hemisphere, again, we see the same thing. We see an increasing trend here for the historical, but maybe not as robust as the diurnal tide trend. And oddly enough, it keeps going up. So I don't have an explanation for that. And we'd have to look into the drivers of these tides to really understand what's trending and what's driving this variability. OK. So that's it. Here are my conclusions. So we've done these past and future integrations and with this high-top model, and it's the only high-top model, as far as I know, that has interactive chemistry, and a thermosphere that's actually done these simulations for CMIP. Atmospheric CO2 is increased by 60 ppm from pre-industrial to present, and could, in our own scenario, increase by 400 ppm. So this will lead to cooling throughout the MLT when viewed at constant pressure surfaces. Methane has doubled and could double again, and so we should, and water vapor could increase by 1 to 2 ppm going out to 2100. However, still, at PMC heights, when you look, there's a zero trend line when viewed at constant altitude, no matter what the scenario. It seems invariant. That this appeared to be significant, statistically significant trends in the southern hemisphere and tides, likely related to the stratospheric ozone changes. And I just want to point out that these simulations done for IPCC, or a lot of people contributed to that, a lot of computer resources. So I'd like to just put this up to acknowledge those people. And thanks. Mike? In the back corner.
No.
Okay, so I'm interested in your tidal amplitudes. Okay, you're advertising here a half K per day, and I was wondering what you've done to validate that against available observational evidence, because our no-gaps assimilation indicates like a 4K amplitude, and also ground-based data from Alomar also is indicating on the order of 4 to 5K amplitude over the diurnal cycle. And we also see that the diurnal tide dominates, but I mean, a half K compared to 4K is enormous, as you know, in the PMC world. So if you haven't compared, will you, and what would you do to make it more consistent with what's observed?
So yeah, which height was that?
At PMC heights, 82 kilometers.
We haven't validated the tides in the model. No, this is just a result I did for this particular presentation.
Isn't this just one node?
Yeah, right. So the total field would be the composite of all those, right? So if you're at one location, you're going to see the sum of that. So this is the amplitude of all modes, and they could be additive or subtractive, depending on what ground based location you're looking at. Dave? Dave's got the mic.
I'm not sure if this is a question to you or maybe to Uwe, but you know, when you say at PMC height, there's a zero line. Now, you know, the thing that Mark has found from Sophie is that PMCs seem to occur, at least if you just look globally, north versus south, they occur at a constant pressure, but different heights. And even within one hemisphere, there's an altitude variation as you go towards the pole. So it's not, when you say PMC height, you're assuming that PMC, that you know what the height is. And yet I know, and so maybe it's a question for Uwe, that there, with the historical record, can we say that PMCs would occur on if they occur on constant pressure, that there'd be no height change? Or you know, I'm just trying to sort out what may or may not be consistent.
Using PMC height loosely here, this is just a time series at the model pressure level. So if there's variation in the height, it's not in here.
Measurements of PMC heights are always in the geometrical system. Modern measurements belong to LIDAR observations, geometrical height. And the photometric triangulation from photos, also geometric altitude.
Yep.
What happens on pressure? Which the model might compute. So the answer is on geometric altitude.
Right. So this is why I made this figure, right?
Yes.
And at least the solar occultation are all referred to geometric altitude also.
But shouldn't we expect PMCs to occur at constant pressure surfaces as the atmosphere changes temperature?
Yeah, I mean, there's the figure showing that the relationship of height to temperature kind of indicates probably that they're not fixed at height, are they? They're going to vary with temperature.
Stan, you're really right. This is, for me, one of our problems identifying in this workshop, which is the system we should looking for. No, from the physics, from radiation, or I always would expect that the story should play on pressure altitudes, mm-hmm. on pressure levels. But what we see here is from the observation that at constant altitude there is always the same story. I have no answer so far.
We expect the GMC, I guess I should talk in the microphone.
We expect the PMCs to change altitude as the pressure surfaces change. And consequently, if you have a trend at a cooling trend, PMCs go to a lower altitude, they experience that cooling, maybe they can increase in frequency. Nevertheless, if you make a LIDAR measurement of temperature in a geometric system at, let's say, 87 kilometers, you're not going to see, in theory, a trend.
Think about the PMC altitude, which is constant in the geometric system.
Is it? Are PMCs constant?
With latitude, with hemisphere?
With decade?
Yes.
I mean, I know I've found looking at constant pressure, where I've been looking at comparing the MLS temperature water vapor measurements with the PMC measurements, to the extent that we have altitude information, how it differs between hemisphere or with latitude, if you use a constant pressure surface, it does a reasonable job of mimicking the hemisphere differences and the latitude differences.
Exactly. And that's what we expect, right? Just like the F region.
One comment about the constant of altitude. I mean, it varies with 40 meter over 1,000 kilometer in latitude. So it's really not varying a lot with latitude.
It's like a kilometer higher in the south than in the north.
Yeah, but that's south to north. That's something different.
But it's the same pressure south to north.
In the south, there is a couple. You're talking certainly a kilometer or more between the pole and 60 degrees.
No, 300 meters
The height of the NLC over Kühlungsborn, which is Germany 54 north, is almost the same compared to Spitsbergen 78 north. There's a difference of 300 meter only.
I was talking about the South Pole data, where it's the Southern Hemisphere data, where you have measurements at the South Pole and Rothera. It's
no, my question.
Oh, there's a question?
You were using the SESM with a gravity wave parameterization of excitation of gravity waves?
Yes.
And has this a big effect on the mesospheric temperatures, mesopause temperatures?
Chuck can talk about that tomorrow. Better wait till.
Okay.
Any other questions? We'll go to the last talk in the session.